The way I view conservative is to conserve or preserve the city's resources. There is a lot of deferred maintenance on facilities. There is pension funding that needs to be done. And so when I say conservative, I do mean priorities and focusing our resources on the things that we already are invested in.
Pod BN.
Elections Edition. Here we go at the Play Normal Esports Studio. This is Pod BN Elections Edition. This is Tyson.
And I'm Justin.
And we are going to start our interviews with all of the Bloomington and Normal City Council candidates.
Yeah, so when we started the Pod BN, we didn't want to make it a political podcast. And so we thought we'd have these council candidates and town council, city council candidates on, and kind of label it as just election.
Yeah.
That way, if you're not into that, don't listen to it.
Yeah, we're definitely coming out of the closet here as the local politics junkies that we are.
Yeah.
And it's not everyone's thing, but it is our thing, so we're going to go ahead and do it.
But even if it's not your thing, I would challenge people to listen to it a little bit, just because you're going to learn something, and you're going to go to the voting booth in April, and you're going to vote for your city council person if you live in one of these wards or if you live in the town of Normal. And I think it's smart to know as much as you can about them.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to provide on Pod BN, I think, with these interviews is something a little bit more than what you can hear on a 10 or 15 minute thing that you might hear on the radio, right?
Yes. And if you are looking for people who are doing big things in Bloomington Normal, like it says in our tagline on our podcast, one of the big things that people do is get involved in local politics and run for office. It is a huge time commitment, both to run and to be on city council. So today we are talking to Donna Bolin. She is one of the two candidates running in Ward 2.
Yeah, I think we did a good job of getting to know her, getting a little bit of her history, how long she's been in town.
And without further ado, let's start our conversation with Donna.
3, 2, 1. Welcome, Donna. Thanks for coming on to Pod BN.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Yeah, I'm excited that you got to join us. We're trying to invite all town and city council candidates just to hear a little bit more about them, more of a long-length conversation more than anything. We know you guys are going to do your own media, but I think this helps get on, past the 10, 15-minute mark of what radio can do. So we appreciate you coming on. Start off, just tell me a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? All that kind of stuff.
Well, originally I'm from Chicago. I was born in the shadow of Wrigley Field, Cubby fan. I've lived here for 26 years, raised my children here. They went to District 87 schools. I lived near Rolling Brook Park, which is Ward 8. And once they grew up and moved out of the house, I downsized, moved out to Ward 2. And I'm happy out there. It's a little bit on the periphery, but it's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I just got interested in city government, partly because out where I live, there were some issues with the developers. And I was interacting with Jim Karsh.
Okay.
And he's excellent.
Public Works Director.
Public
Works.
Mm-hmm. And he and I were able to resolve the problem, and he did a great job, very happy with it. But from there, I became very familiar with city code, because that's how we had to resolve the problem, mm-hmm. was enforcement of the city code related to developers.
Sure.
So I became very, like I said, familiar, and it's almost like going down the rabbit hole. There are so many city codes, and I learned a lot. And from there, it was just sort of a springboard into talking to the council and getting involved with issues throughout the city.
So that concern kind of sparked an interest of
mm-hmm.
what else is mm-hmm. going on within the city.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
It's not everyone who has the volition or ability to be able to dig through that stuff and understand it. How'd you kind of get your footing on it, I guess?
Well, the website is excellent. And if you know how to maneuver through the website, which is not necessarily easy, there's a vast amount of information on there. And like I said, I delved into the ordinances, and from there, trying to get the work done in the subdivision, you have to get into the finances for that, because it has to be funded.
Yeah.
And then you find out, well, which departments are funded, which ones aren't. Do fees need to be raised in order to cover the work? And it just sort of went from there and just exploded. Mm-hmm. So this is the fourth budget cycle that I've been involved in,
yeah.
And I think it's very fascinating.
Did you have a history in finance prior? Or?
No, not at all. My,
okay.
my background is actually science.
Okay.
And specifically in the medical field.
Oh, okay.
So
I didn't know that. Very
yeah.
cool. And so, like Tyson alluded to, I mean, most people, they see a budget, or especially a municipal budget, and they it's a little daunting. So you kind of went after it, dug into the weeds. Was there a certain section or line item or anything that caught interest that got you initially ready to, okay, because for people that don't know, you are a regular at public comment during city council meetings. What sparked that first to get up there and start talking about city budget and that kind of stuff?
Well, now this is 5 years ago.
Okay.
And things have changed. I was told, I don't want to say by who,
okay.
but there was a limited budget for sewer. The issue was not underground sewers, but mm-hmm. the top.
Like the drain?
Well, what are they called? Retention basins.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Detention basin. So I was told, well, there's no funding, you know, through the sewer
mm-hmm.
and the water. And I'm like, well, I pay for that. And I'm sure, everybody pays for it.
Yeah.
The entire city pays for that. And it's like, well, why isn't there funding? You know, so you start digging and digging, and it's very complicated, Tyson mm-hmm. knows, and, you know, I couldn't figure out, so I began talking to people and all that kind of thing, and yes, you need to raise fees to meet how much it costs, but there's always other expenses,
mm-hmm.
and there's been a challenge ever since the recession for having enough finances,
yeah,
you know, to pay for things. So it's pick and choose.
It's the age-old question, right? Like, what's
mm-hmm.
where do you put your dollars
right.
that you have?
Right.
Right.
So you alluded just then to looking at the budget. You and I had an opportunity to work together. Was that over a year ago?
That was last budget cycle.
Last budget cycle,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So we worked together with some other people who were, you know, engaged in frequent public commenters to look through the budget. Diana Hellman brought us together to requested that we provide her some thoughts on what we thought. So I'll have to say, to be transparent, I was a little bit concerned that I wouldn't fit in. I was a little age difference there with you guys, maybe a bit of a political difference too. But I really enjoyed working with you on that. I have to say, it is just so complex, though, trying to read the municipal budget. That was one thing we kept coming back to. It's just, it is so hard to figure out, you know, where the money is going and coming from in it. You've been doing it longer than I have. Do you feel like do you still have that kind of overarching reaction to it, that it doesn't seem like it should be this complicated? Or is it just a matter, once you spend enough time with it, you can kind of see what's going on?
I have gotten a better understanding over the years. However, I do believe that municipal budgeting is totally different than standard budgeting. So unless you have studied that, or unless your expertise is in that area, I'm not sure you can ever really understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spoken at public comment, just being honest, I say, I look at the city budget like I look at my home budget.
Right.
You have X amount of dollars, you have your priorities, and you spend accordingly. I try to keep it in my mind simple, and when I'm speaking to someone, keep it simple.
Sure. Mm-hmm. It certainly helps with those that haven't deep dove into it. Because, I mean, at a high level, that makes sense. But as you both have pointed out, I mean, it is different. And it's a very much more complex than my home budget. I mean, mm-hmm. I have my salary, my wife's salary, and our expenses. It's pretty easy to, pretty easy to manage that. And then you look at our city budget, and I don't even know how many line items there are, and how many different sources of revenue that comes in. And some of those sources of revenue are more dependable than others. Some trend up, some trend down. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things to think about when you talk about that. You said you were from Chicago originally, Wrigleyville. I'm a Cubs fan too. So how long did you spend up there in your adult life? Did you spend quite a bit of time in Chicago before coming down here?
I went to college in Chicago. I went to DePaul University.
Okay.
And which, of course, is in the same neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then I moved with my husband, got a job in East Tennessee with the university. And so we moved there and stayed there for about 15 years. So I moved from Chicago when I was late 20s.
Okay.
And then spent 15 years in East Tennessee and then moved here. So
what brought you here?
A job.
From
my husband. Yeah,
okay.
My husband's job.
Very good. And so I always like to ask this question for anybody that's lived in multiple places. What is it about Bloomington? I mean, what are some of the good things? And also, what are some of the things you saw in East Tennessee or Chicago that you wish we could have here that we don't? Besides the Cubs.
Well, the Cubs are close enough.
They are pretty
close.
Yeah.
I still have family in Chicago. I drive up there often. The thing that I liked about Bloomington is that it kind of reminds me of a Chicago suburb. It has not a lot of traffic. It has excellent school system, well-educated. I can drive to Chicago if I want to. I can drive to Indianapolis if I want to. I can drive to St. Louis if I want to. There's a train, okay? I'm always a fan of living in a university town.
Yeah.
The town that we lived in Tennessee was university. However, when I moved there, and this kind of, I have to chuckle, it was a dry county.
Oh, okay.
So moving from Chicago to a smaller town in a dry county was a culture shock. But eventually they, you know, passed laws to change and all. So, you know, living in a small town has a whole lot of advantages. It's very friendly. We came here for a job, and that's what is the attraction.
Yeah.
It's also a lot easier to get involved here when you decide to, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that during this process, the process you described at the beginning with the issue with the developer, you're able to work with the head of public works to resolve your issue. Probably if you're in Chicago, you're getting some, you know, third or fourth tier guy who's going to be hearing your concern, right? So that access is extremely, you know, enjoyable here. And the fact that, I mean, like, you can say, I see city council and I think I can make a difference there, and I'm going to go make a run for it. And you don't have to have this massive political machine behind you in order to do that. You can decide to do it, and you can speak to the public and see if your ideas resonate, mm-hmm. right?
So when was it that you decided to run for city council? Obviously, you're running in Ward 2, so Ward 2 is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it's south west Bloomington. Mm-hmm. So most commonly, Fox Creek area is what I think of when I think of that. How far does it go outside of Fox Creek, though? It butts up to Miller Park a little bit on the south side, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Morris Avenue is sort of a boundary. Bunn Avenue is a boundary. Actually, Ward 2 is really a microcosm
of
socioeconomic diversity.
Yeah.
There's three trailer parks.
Right.
Everybody thinks Fox Creek
and
everything, but there aren't. And there's also mid-range income,
mm-hmm.
you know, like what I would call the blue-collar or the working middle class.
Sure.
And it's very interesting to talk to them because I kind of grew up in that kind of economic situation. And I've enjoyed speaking. That's the thing I've like the most about campaigning and getting involved in this is speaking to my neighbors, basically, the people in the city, and listening to their concerns, listening to what they like, listening to what they don't like. I don't always agree with what they say, but they're being honest, and I really appreciate that.
So, Ward 2, you've been going to city council meetings, you've deep-dived into the budget, and David Sage is currently the sitting alderman but has decided not to run again. Is that when you made up your mind, or did you make up your mind months before and think, you know, when I have an opportunity, it's going to happen?
Well, I made up my mind when David Sage said he wasn't going to run. I've had this conversation with other people. Several people, as a matter of fact, suggested that I run. Mm-hmm. But I don't view myself necessarily in that, or I did not view myself in that capacity. I'm sort of an introvert.
Yeah.
But I believe I have the background, the knowledge, the ability to process thoughtfully, where I would come up with a reasonable decision when it comes to either the budget or, well, basically that's all there is. Do we have money to pay for this? I mean, that's what it boils down to.
But often, I mean, when we're talking about that, especially with city government, stuff comes up that you may not have money for at the time. Mm-hmm. And so the question, it doesn't make it any less important for those things to be done. But it's not always a simple yes or no. It's, can we get it from somewhere else? You know, mm-hmm. And whether that is, you know, raising taxes or whether that is cutting another line item somewhere else. So it's not always, you know, well, no, it's not there. Let's not do it. I'm thinking of, you know, parks, and they're always on the top list of everything to get cut. Whenever people are looking to cut budgets, it's like, you know, we're spending all this in Parks and Rec. But there's value in the Parks Department, mm-hmm. and we have a wonderful Parks Department. We have a lot of parks in our community, too. But, you know, studies show that having those parks help with crime and student, you know, kids having something to do after school and all those types of things. So it's not always as simple as, I guess, what my point is, right? You can't just say, there's no money for this, let's not do it.
Well, actually, that's very interesting because, again, on the website, mm-hmm. Property taxes are supposed to go to parks.
Yeah.
Along with police and fire and the retirement for city employees. And the way I look at it is that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Because it benefits everyone. And it should.
And parks should, in theory, based on what you said, parks should raise property value, which
correct.
Helps pay for itself a little bit, right?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So you're right. Parks are very important. And I view them as public health, in a sense. Get out and get fresh exercise, mental health, sunshine, mm-hmm. interact with other people. So I do think that parks are very important. However, programming, I believe, should pay for itself. Now, let me clarify this. If there is not the demand, not enough people are participating, and the cost is out of line, perhaps that program mm-hmm. could be eliminated. That doesn't mean cut everything out of parks. And I think that that could be a point that could be discussed.
That's always, I don't remember the conversation, but I know Scott Black has brought up the Zumba class many times.
Oh.
Back when they cut a Zumba class and how much backlash he got for whatever that was. So, I mean, because the people that do participate usually need it, love it, care about it.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, it may not always be, something has to give at some point, I guess, right?
Well, it has to be kind of cost effective.
Yeah. We've used, I have a 9-year-old daughter, and we've used a couple of the programs. I mean, she played t-ball when she was younger through the Parks and Rec. I think she did a dance class or two through Parks and Rec when she was younger, and those were always pretty well attended, so I gotta imagine that they probably paid for themselves. But when you get that book with all the different programs that Parks and Rec put on, one, hats off to the Parks and Rec department, because it's a lot to do and a lot of, you know, seasonal employees to manage and all that, so they do a good job with what they have. But it is it's a big book of programs. It almost looks like a community college's list of different things that they offer. So, yeah, I don't disagree with that.
So one of the things that public comment you speak about a lot related to the pensions is the pension spiking issue. And maybe for people who aren't familiar with that term, since you brought up pensions with the real estate taxes, maybe could you explain like what that is, kind of what you see as being current state on that, and where you'd like to see that go in particular? Because, I mean, if we are spending more than we should on our pensions, and that's less money for things like the parks, right, if that's coming out of the same pot.
It's a little bit complicated. Again, I've been studying this for 4 years. Police and fire are on a separate pension. They basically work through the state with their own union representatives. They do not spike their pensions, okay? IMRF, which is the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, is for all the other employees. And I think it was back in 1998, 1995, under previous administrations, that it was allowed, or the employees were allowed, to buy back all of their vacation and sick leave and apply it within the last year of their employment, which then ended up spiking their final pay, which then affect their retirement
right.
income. So that money is not budgeted. That money ends up coming from other funds or the reserve fund. Now, we were reported in the Chicago Tribune as being the highest pension spiking with one of our employees. And
was just that employee, or the city as a whole was the highest?
One employee.
Okay.
And from there, it's a problem throughout the state.
Yeah.
It's not just Bloomington. So there, Springfield actually took the union to court. And the court decided not allowing pension spiking does not affect the reduction of pension. You know, there's
right.
a clause in the state statute that you cannot reduce pension. So IMR...
I just want to make sure. So if a city says, I'm not going to allow pension spiking, that does not break the rule that...
Correct.
That's not reducing... Okay,
correct.
I got
you. Now, let's see. Go back. And the reason being is that the employee has actually made a contract with IMRF, not the state.
Okay.
Okay. So now that the ruling has been made, which was made 2 years ago, and it has gone through the, what is it, Fair Labor Practice
mm-hmm.
review, the council has given the okay to the city manager to negotiate further. I personally would like to just, you know, get rid of it, but, you know, you have to negotiate.
It's
no,
not that
I mean,
easy,
you,
right?
you know, you have to negotiate with the unions, and I understand that.
So what's your fix on that now? Would it be to do what Springfield did?
Excuse me?
What would be your fix to make sure Bloomington can't do that or doesn't do that?
Well, the only way they can do that is through negotiation.
Okay.
And, you know, that, of course, is a long process.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one thing, you know, I want to make something clear is that this has to do with grandfathered.
Sure.
You know, the new employees from 2012, I think, don't qualify for this. This
right.
is grandfathered. But there are approximately 200.
200 left
right.
prior to that.
And, you know, for my calculations, and this is backward, you don't know what really is going to happen going forward, but for my calculations, from now until all of these grandfathered employees move on, it could be up to $5 million,
yeah.
which could go toward
anything.
Police pension or streets or you know, something sure. else. And that's what I've spoken about is please fix this so we don't have to, what I consider is like a waste of money or misused money.
Yeah, not what it was intended for.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. I think that's fair.
I think it's an interesting issue because it can seem sensitive when you're talking about it because when it comes up, it's an individual person, right? So right. it's like, you know, Paul is retiring and here's his pension. So it almost seems like a bit invasive. You know, you can pull out those records and you can say like, you know, like it seems like you're aiming it and like being mean to a person, right? But that it is, it's not Paul's fault. It's not like Paul's doing something wrong. It's just the current rules allow, but there actually isn't any, for the listeners, there isn't anyone named Paul. He's a theoretical person I made up. You know, it's not this individual person's fault, and you're not saying that that person's doing something wrong. It's, there's a system that's allowing things like this to happen. I believe it's wasting money. It's spending money on something that's not necessary that we could be paying on something
Correct.
Else, right?
Correct.
So, yeah.
We're coming up close to our halfway point. So what Tyson and I like to do right before we take a quick break is I kind of just throw some words at you and get your first reaction to the words. If there's something interesting you want to discuss after the break on any of these, we can. But these okay. are just kind of first thoughts that come to your mind when I say certain words. Sports complex.
Coliseum.
Sure. We talked about this a little bit. Parks.
Health.
Library.
Education.
Downtown.
Neighborhood.
Eastland Mall.
I think that's probably good enough.
Yeah.
A deep sigh.
private property.
Yeah. And urban sprawl.
It's there.
it's already there. All right. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back and maybe talk about some more of those in more detail. Take this break to thank our sponsors, which is Normal Gadgets and Play Normal Esports. We want to let you know about a Super Smash Brothers Ultimate tournament they have January 18th. They're having it here at Play Normal Esports on Eldorado Road. Be sure to visit them on Facebook. Check out their website for more information.
So let's kick off this second part here. We had a chance to get to know you a little bit in the first part. Let's turn your attention to your platform. One of the things that's featured prominently in your platform is you are a fiscal conservative. And that can mean different things to different people. It can mean different things federally than it does locally. So perhaps we could start there. Could you tell us a bit about what that means to you when you say I'm a fiscal conservative?
Okay, well, fiscal basically has to do with money. And conservative, the way I view conservative is to conserve or preserve the city's resources. There is a lot of deferred maintenance on facilities. There is pension funding that needs to be done. And so when I say conservative, I do mean priorities and focusing our resources on the things that we already are invested in.
So what types of those things?
Well, things that you can see, the parks, public safety, the buildings. Many of the buildings we own are in pretty bad shape and need to be.
Okay. So you're saying take care of what we have before you go building anything new.
Well, that would be a, you know, priority, take care of what we have. And, you know, yes, if there's money left or whatever, then.
Yeah.
Or if there's funding options. But I do believe that you need to take care of what's already there. It's been ignored, deferred.
Something that I'm surprised of, and it's something I might not have the knowledge of, I might be naive to. But I'll bring up O'Neill Park Pool just because that's the example that's in my head now. But there are several examples I'm sure we could think of throughout the city. How did it get to the point where it is today without, you know, where did it get to a point where it's so bad that we have to spend all this money? Like most businesses, not to say government runs like a business all the time because I know it doesn't, but you have a capital improvement plan where you're putting this maintenance in these projects every year, or you're putting money back every year because you know that this is going to have to be replaced in every 20 years or 10 years. How does that happen where we're with O'Neill Pool specifically, but anything, we get to a point where it's like, well, now we either got to drop all this money in and build all this thing new, or we can't do anything with it and it's going to close?
I can't really answer that question because I'm not privy to behind the scenes with discussions and actually some of the history. The pool was built, 25 years ago or something? All right. And it hasn't been maintained very well since then. I would say, the CIP maybe hasn't been followed or implemented effectively, and that goes back to priorities. One thing, too, I am, as a fiscal conservative, cautious. Mm-hmm. I don't like the idea of taking unnecessary risks. So that also would apply to, if we have a pool that needs to be replaced, don't risk our resources on something that might benefit us in the future.
Yeah, that's, I see on your platform too, there's some documents that Donna brought in that listeners can't see, but we'll read what we're referencing here. I see that Strong Towns is a part of your platform. Strong Towns is a planning and zoning organization that puts out some really great articles. If anyone is interested, like the people in this room are, in geeking out on some topics that are esoteric but really impactful in the long run, Strong Towns is a great place to go. To that risk point, one of the things in their overall philosophy is that municipalities should be really risk averse, essentially. They should be taking on things that are not handled well by the private sector, but they shouldn't be making gambles with mm-hmm. taxpayer money, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're nodding your head, so it seems like you agree with that outlook. What comes to mind when you hear that, of times when that's done well or times when that hasn't been done well around here?
Here comes my filter off. After living here for 26 years, I've seen a lot of risk investment with the idea that it will provide an economic engine, economic improvement, draw in visitors. And a blatant one is the outlet mall. Okay. Another one,
where was that outlet mall? Sorry.
It's all right. It's West Bloomington, west on Route 9.
Okay.
Yeah, it's near the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Interstates.
Yeah.
I don't think it could be classified as a mall anymore.
Okay. But is that the place that,
they have a gun range out there now?
And, the Build-A-Bed. What's that called? Is it Build-A-Bed?
No.
It sounds like Build-A-Bear, which is not the same thing.
Bed Blitz.
There we go. Okay, they do it out there by the Interstate Center. Okay, thank you.
Yep. Yeah, and I think the Public Works might do training.
Oh, okay.
Plowing, I didn't know and that. Stuff out there. Yeah.
That's where we got our dog. There's a dog fostering group that goes out there. So, anyway. Yeah, it definitely seems underutilized. I don't believe that's what they intended it for.
And another thing, and this relates to Ward 2, there are two municipal golf courses, mm-hmm. and both of them were sold to the public as economic drivers. It would bring in all sorts of people from out of state and within the state, and it would just generate all sorts of money. And I do not believe that they have been leveraged enough. I think they could be leveraged more. And I mean, two years ago, they were talking about selling them.
Yeah, I thought they did do a study, and I could be wrong. I think I remember speaking to Alderman Jamie Maffey in Ward 1 about it, that they did something, because he was initially, I think, in favor of looking at privatizing, mm-hmm. but then something, new information developed, and, mm-hmm. and it turned out that wouldn't have been a good idea fiscally. I remember, I just did it, the Bloomington 101, I think you've Have you gone through that, Don?
No, I have not.
Okay. I did Bloomington 101 about a year and a half ago. And I remember with the we sat through the parks section, and they were talking like they were talking about the Den, especially in Worth too, about there's Chicago people that come down and play that and all tournaments and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know the numbers; I don't have them in front of me, but I think there is something to be said about that. I'm not a golfer at all, so I don't get it. But
well, there was a suggestion made by one of the individuals that worked on that committee. With Tyson and I last year. He's an avid golfer, and he's actually from Green Bay. I mean, I see him walking around the other day with shorts on. So anyway, he's convinced that people would come from Milwaukee for the weekend in April to golf.
Yeah.
So expanding the time that the golf course is open. And then also offer the tournament in combination with a BCPA program.
Okay, I like that.
Okay, see, it's that type of thing with leveraging.
Mm-hmm.
Have a, I call it like the tulip tournament in April, and then if there's a show going on, try to coordinate it, give a hotel package.
Or just have like, I mean, I think that's a good idea. 1 month, where whether it be April, where it's an out of town package, you know, you, where if you're coming from out of town, we you can we could put a package together, and I think that's a really good idea.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that before, but part of conservative in the sense that you're describing is also not just financial, but then also this is a way of conserving our assets too, right? We have a golf course, we have a BCPA. You conserve them by making them profitable.
Successful.
So you invest the necessary thought and expertise and creativity in them to really make them successful.
Sure.
It doesn't mean, I think there are probably fiscal conservatives in town who say the only fiscally responsible thing to do is just sell all these things because it's not part of the proper role of government and we need to just totally get out of that, right? So there's room for a conversation between those extremes.
So in Bloomington, compared to normal, we have a ward system, and we've talked about you being from Ward 2 and running for Ward 2 alderman. What are some issues specific to Ward 2 that you think you could help with if you did win the election?
Well, that, first of all, it's going to be a lot of work. The tax base for Ward 2 is primarily residential. There's limited commercial. And part of that, it's claimed, is because of that bond extension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very difficult to cross the tracks, and there's a two-lane and all that. So they're working on, in the CIP, expanding or widening the bond street section of Hamilton. So the role then would be to attract commercial in that area along that road. I think that's a great idea if it happens. However, I spoke to a commercial realtor recently, and they do a lot of data collecting, realtors and businesses, and they basically want to be visible. And to be visible, you have to be on veterans.
Sure.
So, you know, there would need to be a lot of finagling and negotiations to get, you know, someone to build some kind of commercial.
That's what I was, I was going to question what type of commercial, because I agree with the realtor. You know, if you're a retail store, you want to be seen. You want to be seen, visible as much as possible. But Bellis Landscaping is over there in Ward 2, right?
Correct. So, that's off Fox Creek Road.
And I mean, as much as I'm sure he wants to see his sign from anywhere, he doesn't necessarily need that, right? Like his trucks, his maintenance crews can go on. So it depends on the type of businesses that you have on whether that. So it's, I think that's the thought that has to go into it. It's what type of commercial development do we want to bring here, and what type do we want to entice to bring here?
Well, the advantage of that connection with Hamilton is that it would then feed directly into the entrance of 74.
Yeah.
74 is just right there.
Right.
So as far as transporting goods and, you know, into town, out of town,
yeah,
it would be very beneficial to locate along Hamilton in that area.
Now, I know this is not the ideal, and I could get in trouble from some or two people for saying this, I think, but, like, on the corner where the radio station is over there, you know, being right off the interstate, a big gas station I can see going there. I think if I pulled into another municipality, it wouldn't surprise me to see something like that sitting there. And but it depends how to, what, because once you do a gas station, then it kind of does dictate what else is going to go around it, I think, right? You're not going to build a residential area right there or anything. So, yeah, that's interesting. So looking at the big picture then on the city level, maybe not necessarily in Ward 2, what needs to happen in your eyes to better the city, whether it's to, you know, conserve money, to, you know, invest in certain areas of the community and not others? What throughout the city do you want to bring when you're on council?
Well, I could go back to that strong towns philosophy, and how can I put this? I've already talked about reducing the risk of investment, but I do believe that development should be slow, incremental, and I do believe the best development happens organically. And this goes back to my science background. It's an ecosystem. The city is an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And if government or someone comes in and changes this part of the city, that will affect, whether we want it or not, the other parts of the city.
Sure.
And we don't know what the consequences are. They could be good, they could be bad. So, again, that's why organically and incrementally development, I think, should happen. Now, also, my philosophy is that you mentioned ward system.
Mm-hmm.
If something good happens in Scott Black's ward, it's going to benefit mine because it overall benefits the city.
Right.
If something happens downtown, it's going to benefit the entire city. So that too.
And I agree. It's no secret I'm a huge advocate of downtown, and I want to see as much happen down there as possible. But I think you hit the nail on the head that a strong downtown or a strong ward wherever is good for the entire community. The reason why I'm a fan of downtown is because of the density that downtown could have. We could get a lot more tax dollars per square mile than we could almost anywhere else in the city, because the, you know, if the further east you go, the bigger the yards get, and that's how it's developed. So that's what always enticed me. What kind of things downtown specifically do you think could happen? Should we do, and what type of things would be off the table for you?
Yeah, and your answer to the lightning round was neighborhood. So I was curious to hear a little bit more about in that, where that board association came in.
Well, of course, there's, you know, the active Bloomington Association.
Yeah.
There is residential down there. And I go back to growing up in the neighborhoods of Chicago. You know, the neighborhood butcher. So there's, you know, retail down there. And that's kind of the way organically a neighborhood would grow. You'd have, you know, small retailers where you could walk down the street, you know, get your bread and chickens and, you know, and you live upstairs or wherever you would live, and you wouldn't necessarily have to drive to get your necessities. Now, you may have to drive to go to work.
Sure.
You know, you can't expect everybody in town to work downtown, but that's what I mean about organic development.
But how do you get that? So, I mean, not a lot has been invested downtown lately. Of course, the arena is the big white elephant that's there that you know, we could have a whole separate probably podcast talking about the arena. But besides that, there hasn't been a big investment downtown, and we haven't seen that kind of organic growth of the butcher coming in or the grocery store coming in. So how do we get that so that we can capitalize on the, you know, everything that downtown could be, whether it's tourism or more residents living there or whatever? How do we get that?
Well, both of you are on the planning commission.
Yeah.
And you're addressing and updating.
Trying.
Okay. Well, I've been watching that too. anyway, I think that's the way the city or municipality has the biggest effect.
Yeah.
Okay. On developing an area. I do not believe that tax dollars should be used to develop the downtown, per se. If you look at the comprehensive plan, there's at least a third of the land use downtown. And I'm not talking about the core.
Sure.
I'm talking about, you know,
the big one.
the old name,
right.
The old downtown, is government use. Yeah. So there's no tax, you know.
That's a fair point.
Coming from that. And it actually costs because the employees that work there and all. So I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the council, I don't think the council has had an answer either, because 23 years ago, a TIF district was put in.
Yeah.
And the Enzenberger building and all that other stuff. And even the Enzenberger building is not full yet for all the money that it's been invested. And so you have to wonder, I recently saw a quote from Steve Jobs, and I have to put this out there, is that you cannot connect the dots going forward. You know, you're looking, and you are asking me questions, how can we fix this going forward? he said, you have to connect the dots looking back. That doesn't mean going back.
Right.
It look back. Nobody has a crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look back at what worked, what didn't work, build on what works, and then go forward. With the idea that we're going to go forward, but not blindly.
I'll get on my soapbox for 30 seconds, and then I'll go back to something else. Because I actually agree with a lot of what you said. In my point of view, and as you pointed out, I'm on the Planning Commission, and I've sat on that downtown task force, and I did some of those things. And the report we presented on the task force was pretty, it covered a lot of things, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But what kind of gets at me is some of the smaller things that we suggested that came from the comprehensive plan and the FAR plan department heads are things that I think the city could do at a very low cost, sometimes no cost, and I still don't see that getting done. And that's what's the frustrating part about someone like me who volunteered their time to go sit on this and listen to all these things and do all this, is I get why you don't want to build this multi-million dollar thing. I can understand that. We don't have multi-million dollars. If you figure out a way, cool, that's not what I was tasked with. But like the painting of the crosswalks or the putting more flowers or the any of those small things that would make it a downtown attractive, because the answer that I don't know, because I don't have the crystal ball either, is what do we want to do first? Entice businesses or entice residents? Because residents will bring businesses will hopefully bring residents. It's a chicken or the egg dispute. But what I do know is neither of those things are going to want to come down unless you have a clean-looking, unique-looking space. If they can get the same space on Veterans or on Hershey that they could downtown, they probably would, because there's more people there. So that's just my little – we need to do the small things that don't cost a lot of money or sometimes no money. If we're going to repair and paint stripes to a crosswalk anyway, why not make them look different than any other crosswalk in town? So that's kind of where I wanted to stand and give my
– Well, again, I will agree with you here, but that goes back to the strong town philosophy of incremental. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is incremental investment. And once you see that it's working,
mm-hmm.
with hindsight,
sure.
you move forward to the next step, which would be hopefully bringing business down.
Right.
Okay, so we're kind of on the same page. It's just I call myself fiscally conservative, and I don't, know where you stand.
It depends who you ask some days.
Oh. Yeah, I think one thing which I'm assuming you'd agree with is you mentioned the outlet mall. Those things are – those types of investments, especially if they use tax dollars and incenting either residents or commercial properties to live away from the core, is definitely not something that helps the downtown thrive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we don't want to maybe we don't want to overcompensate and spend a whole bunch of money on the downtown, but it does seem like we could, at a minimum, stop spending money to encourage people away from downtown, right?
Well, I will go back to the mall is private property. They seem to know what they're doing. They have several other successful malls. Leave it alone. I wouldn't touch it.
I don't disagree with that. I think it would be a different story if they didn't bring in Planet Fitness, if they didn't bring in H&M. I don't know if they brought out any other larger stores yet.
Outback
Steakhouse, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if it was still sitting there with five stores in that giant complex and no movement happening, I think I might be singing a different tune. But I do see, being that it is private property, I see them trying to revitalize it themselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if an influx of anything the city could provide would boost that or make that any better than they're already doing at this point.
To your point of planning and zoning, though, something we can do is... I don't know the logistics of this, but my assumption is that they built the required amount of parking for a facility of that size, and we have now observed that these types of huge parking lots are unnecessary. There's other than doing the occasional drug deal, I don't know that the outside parking spots are used for anything in those types of facilities.
Do you have evidence of drug deals?
it's a presupposition. Anyway, that... Joking aside, there's too much parking in some of these places. And so doing something like removing some of the parking and putting Outback in there to make better use of that space that previously was just a waste. There's right. no tax income coming from that. But now Outback's not a great example because they just moved down the road.
Right.
But ideally, you bring in a business to make better use of that space and get some income, right? Yeah, I've been talking a lot, but I assume that this is all aligned with how you view things, and you're not objecting to anything I'm talking about.
No, not at all. And again, the owners of Eastland Mall have several successful malls. So I assume they know what they're doing, and they are bringing in new business. And from what I've heard, well, I've been here 26 years. They used to have a little video game thing that my son just loved. They used to have some other... Oh, there was a restaurant inside the mall.
Mm-hmm.
There was a movie theater inside the mall.
I remember the movie theater. Woolworths, they had a restaurant inside there.
So, you know, there's always ebb and flow and flux and change, and I think that that's what's going on now.
Mm.
And it's probably a good thing.
Yeah. And the city should... we should get out of their way and let them be innovative with their spaces.
Correct.
As much as we feel comfortable doing.
Correct.
We have about 5 minutes or so left, so I want to make sure, is there anything you want to make sure the people listening to this podcast know about you? You're running for Ward 2 in the city of Bloomington, which is the southwest part of Bloomington. You do have an opponent, correct?
Correct.
Is it just one, right?
Correct.
All right, so you have one opponent. It's a nonpartisan race. What else should everybody know about you?
Have we covered it?
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered it.
Yeah.
I do want to put my focus on not just the fiscal. The council has five major priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And by addressing those, which I support, the economic development... and also infrastructure. Everybody talks about infrastructure. And also the financial planning, which Tyson and I have worked on that last year. I want to continue working on that because I personally don't believe you can redevelop or regenerate anything within the city without good, solid financial planning. And the CIP, Capital Improvement Plan already has funding for the reducing the emergency response time. And then the downtown plan. And we've discussed that briefly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you and I, and maybe even everyone in the city, has, from what I've talked to the people walking around Ward 2, they agree
yeah.
with these ideas that I've shared. And I'm actually not sharing just my personal opinion. These are some of the things that I've heard
right.
the people live. And those that live in Fox Creek subdivision, they're business owners. Mm-hmm. That's the bread and butter of the city. And listening to them and supporting their ideas, I think, will have a very positive effect on the community as a whole.
So when is the election?
First Tuesday in April.
There you go. And if someone wanted to find out more information about you, is there a website or anywhere they can go, Facebook?
I do have a Facebook page. It's Donna Bowling Ward 2. And I do have an email address. I believe that is on the Facebook page. But it is Bowling, B-O-E-L-E-N, dot Donna, D-O-N-N-A, at gmail.com.
And I'll put that in the show notes so that people can okay. see that easily and link to your Facebook page in there, too, so okay. that they can see that.
Donna, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming in and talking to us. I know you didn't have to. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And there we go. The end of our first PodBN Elections Edition. With Donna Bowling.
Yeah, I thought Donna did a good job of letting us get to know her a little better, let us understand why she wanted to run for city council.
I also appreciated her description of what fiscal conservative meant to her.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was talking to her off the air a little bit about how these terms like fiscal conservative or liberal or progressive or whatever get thrown around, and they mean so many things to so many people. So it was nice to get her definition.
And I'm really glad that we're just doing this in general, because something I love about local politics is it's an opportunity where we can just focus on having conversations about the issues and the topics that are important to us and affect our lives. And we don't have to bring all the ugliness of national politics into it. And hopefully we can try to play a part in doing that.
Hopefully we're of some value to some people that are going to the voting booth in April.
Yeah. So you want to talk a little bit more about what's going on at Play Normal Esports?
Yeah, so at Play Normal, they have a whole schedule of stuff that you can get involved in. If you don't want to just drop in and play and you're looking for a tournament or something, hop onto their Facebook or their website. They have everything listed, from Super Smash Brothers to Overwatch, Fortnite, Call of Duty, all the big games they have here. They have them for PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox, the Nintendo thing.
Don't forget about... And don't forget about normal gadgets, too. You know that there's... I know there's some people out there who got that new phone or tablet for Christmas and they've already broken it.
Yeah.
Well, just so you know, it's not that expensive to come fix. You come to Normal Gadgets, they do that kind of stuff all the time. It'll look like new when you get out.
802 South El Dorado Road in Bloomington is Normal Gadgets and Play Normal Esports. You can call them at 309-379-8665 or see them on any of the social stuff. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. You can find them.
Are we done?
I think we're done. Let's do it.
And we're done. We are going to start our...
We got to introduce ourselves.
Yeah, what?
We got to introduce ourselves, too.
Man, you should just do this part.